Welcome to Mountain Talk here on WMMT. Tonight, we are airing a performance of Dust in the Bottomland, an original two-person music drama set in modern-day Appalachia. Composed by West Virginia native Nate May and performed in this recording by singer Andrew Munn with Nate May on piano, Dust in the Bottomland tells the story of a young man who is returning home to West Virginia after years away. He is returning to be with his family as his sister is in a coma induced by a prescription drug overdose. After the performance, join us for a conversation with composer Nate May and singer Andrew Munn about their approach and inspiration in creating this musical work.
The last flower she sold me as a dandelion from the yard. I paid in stale shells and gave it to the girl. And gave it to the girl with the Elvis lunchbox.
I got the call yesterday in Detroit. I'd put off coming home for 10 years and my time was up. Stephanie is in the hospital and this could be it for her. Home is here in West Virginia, but I knew home wouldn't be home anymore. Home had coal underneath it, so home's gone now. Mom, Dad, and Stephanie have new houses, but they aren't homes yet. Mom and Dad are fighting more, and Stephanie, well, she acted like she was in control. Being an addict can teach you to act. My first stop is here in the flower shop. I found the key taped inside the mailbox. It's a whole world she built for herself and for this town. She built it when she was in control, when she didn't have to act. But the move changed that. It wasn't just a move. It was an uprooting. Memories were literally buried or blasted away. And she turned back to the things she could once count on to make her feel human. Pills. Visiting hours start in the morning.
That smell you were smelling was a seized clutch bearing. We got her fixed up and changed the oil gratis. Eddie said he'd take her off the lot, but when I smelled whiskey on his breath, I said, you'd better find someone else. Got two coats of primer on the fence. Don't be surprised if your neighbor's black cat has a few streaks of white. But a few leather lungs you need to, Lord knows you sure need the rest, but I'll sure be happy when you open up them pretty green eyes. I know you wouldn't want flowers in your room. I know you'd want to escape them here in your hospital room, but there they are, dozens of them. These words must reach you like fog on a window pane. As you lie there with sunken eyes, breathing from the lungs of a machine.
I try to imagine what it's like to be in such a profound sleep. This image keeps coming to mind. I don't know if it happened too many times or just once in a dream. It's a hot, muggy day, and I'm in the corner of a department store parking lot, somewhere in some strip mall. There's a walnut tree, with the walnuts scattered around, some of them busted open and looking like guacamole, smelling kind of pungent. And there's some grass trying to grow in a crack in the pavement. And there's trash scattered around, cigarette butts, Coke cans, candy wrappers. It feels like I have nothing better to do than just be in this parking lot, thinking lethargic, half-baked thoughts and getting sunburned. But it's also something else. That image. It's this place. This is the place I escaped from 10 years ago. This is the place I felt forgotten by the world. I would see Dan Rather on the TV set, and I would think about who he was looking at when he stared into the camera. Millions of Americans. But he didn't see us in West Virginia. He was looking right through us. This is the place Stephanie threw kerosene on a garbage fire. This is the place, this very hospital is where they brought her, where they squeezed out ointment from a tube and wrote her a prescription for Oxycontin. This is the place, some field not far from here, where her high school boyfriend showed her how to crush up the pills. You get it a little wet with spit, wrap it in a dollar bill and crush it with your teeth. She caught on fast. This is the place, just a few miles down the highway where Mom would take her every morning before school to get her methadone. She said she once saw a man there with no teeth, eating a bag of chips. The sound it made in his mouth as he gummed it into a paste really seemed to haunt her. Crows. There are crows, too, in that parking lot. All oily looking, bathing in a puddle. and an earthworm that's just crawled out of it and is drying on the blacktop. Time for me to get some rest. Tomorrow I'm going to go back up to the mountain, the place we used to call home. We were playing hide-and-seek down by the old abandoned coal tipple. I was hiding in a tree branch, in plain sight but just above her field of vision. I watched her looking everywhere for me, searching the same place 2, 3, 4 times. She never thought to look up.
Filled with buckshot holes. A limping bow with thorns that bolted when we cracked a twig. A patch of mountain laurel greener than my sister's eyes. And the sound of a wood thrush. And its echoes in the valley. The shadows of tree branches falling on the forest floor. A Christmas fern with fronds extended like a peacock tail. The moss of soggy leaves when the wind is low. Soaked with rain from this morning storm. A cloud of gnats that seemed to panic when they heard my voice. And the print of a bear paw in the mud beside the stream bed. An iron mattress frame, rusted and twisted and sunk into the clay. Four dirt cake dolls and chairs beneath a willow tree. Hunks of busted rubble where there should have been walnuts. A sediment pond where there should have been a beaver dam. A drainage pipe where there should have been a fox den. An 18-story drag line where there should have been a hunting stand. Distorted angles where there should have been God's fingerprints. And sky, sky, where there should have been a mountain. Where there should have been a forest. Squeals of giant machinery where there should have been cicadas. Borders chipped by auger bits where there should have been sassafras. Drainage the color of blood and piss where there should have been a stream. Gray black films of dust where there should have been moss. Unrelenting sun where there should have been shade and sky. These things day world I passed through in haste has now been erased and replaced with something deranged. These things that never could have changed, these things not even dreams could rearrange. The everyday world I passed through in haste has now been erased and replaced with something new.
Count the cars on the coal train and be so proud if we made it to 100 without losing count.
The last time I was in these woods, I was a senior in high school. I couldn't wait to leave. College in Iowa meant I didn't have to come home on the weekends, and I didn't. Or at Christmas, or the summers, I always found a reason. Maybe it's because I always knew it would happen. Ever since I was 7 and I dug up a coal rock in the backyard, kept it a secret from my parents, apart from all the other rocks I showed them so proudly. Of course, there were other signs they had to have known. The mounds and hollers around us had been bought out years ago. There were more hiring ads on the radio. Blasts got louder each month. They had to have known. I just didn't want to talk about it. I didn't want to be there when it happened. Maybe if I'd stayed, it would have been different. Not that I could have saved her, but... forget it. It's no use thinking that way. It's going to be hard to sleep tonight. Before I see Stephanie tomorrow, I think I need to go see Papa, Uncle Silas, Aunt Roberta, and the rest of the crew up at Hodgkin Hill Cemetery. Up there, they've seen everything. Nothing's new to them.
From the color of fungus the swimmer and his pillowing eyes. that swallowed me. When I think of the mist that settles on the water waves, I see pictures in magazines trying to sell this place. But now this place is surrounding me, and I see there are truths here that have been lost on the rest. I see the hills, and I know I'm in the place that's haunted me. Thought you on the poppies tells me you're sleeping, and I know you're at pictures that I can't see. The drug in your bloodstream may not forgive you, but I understand you, and I am beside you.
Not surprisingly, the dead have nothing to say. They just let everything come and go. Stephanie may join them soon. It's a different sleep than the one she's in now. I found the place where they'd put her. She'd be up high enough that the dust from the mines wouldn't reach her. It's a small plot, but with just enough room to plant some poppies around it. Papaver somniferum. Stephanie taught me this. It means sleep-bringing poppy. Sleep is in such high demand that there are wars fought over the flowers that bring it. Sleep is so much easier than dealing with life, with problems that breed more problems. I just want Stephanie to wake up, but I think I know what that feels like, waking up.
You've been listening to Dust in the Bottomland, an original two-person music drama set in modern-day Appalachia here on WMMT's Monday Night Mountain Talk. Join us now for a conversation with composer Nate May and singer Andrew Munn, hosted by WMMT's Mimi Pickering.
You all are calling this a libretto, and perhaps you could tell us a little bit about what a libretto is. Andrew Munn?
Yeah, so a libretto is the text of an opera or a musical work that tells a story, and it's the words that you'll hear me sing, and some speaking as well. So it's like the script of the opera.
Well, tell me a little bit about your music.
So I'll speak briefly about my music. I'm a singer, and I'm the performer of Dust in the Bottomland and the vocal part of it.
Nate, tell us where you're from in West Virginia. I know you're from there, and a little bit about your musical background.
Sure, yeah. I grew up in Huntington, which is in the southwest corner of West Virginia, and I studied jazz in at University of Michigan, which is where I met Andrew. And then I've since then, I've been focusing more on composing in the so-called classical tradition. And that's more what this piece comes out of, but it's definitely got influences from a lot of different types of music.
And so my understanding is that you you wrote the music and that you also wrote a text to accompany the music. And perhaps between the two of you, you could tell us a little bit about what this is all about, the themes that you're dealing with here and the text that you've written and how it came to be. And I should say, Andrew, you've been living in West Virginia for a couple of years now?
Yeah, I've been living in West Virginia for the last 5 years.
5 years, yeah.
And I'm actually on my way to moving out of West Virginia for the foreseeable future, but hopefully coming back at some point. And the work I've been doing has been community organizing work with environmental organizations and some organizations that are also doing economic development in the area. And Dust in the Bottomland has been a kind of a musical vehicle for what I've been working on in a professional way for the last couple of years. And it, I think it reflects that when I was doing environmental organizing and having conversations with people living near surface mines, often the conversation that would end up coming up wouldn't be so much about the blasting or the bad water, although that would be talked about. But once you start talking about the things that people are dealing with on a daily basis, often the topic of prescription drug addiction and abuse comes up. The sense of home and how home has changed in ways that it makes it kind of almost unrecognizable at times. And so these are things that are explored through Dust in the Bottomland, and the character I portray is a young man who's left his home in southern West Virginia about 10 years before Dust in the Bottomland takes place, and then he's coming home for the first time to see his sister, who's in a coma induced by prescription drug overdose. So it deals with that, both the change in the landscape physically and socially that we see on a daily basis.
And Nate, you wrote the text, and what did you draw from in writing it?
Well, I drew a lot from Andrew's help. I was living in Michigan, actually, at the time while I was writing it, and I came down here to Fayette County to visit Andrew and to meet some folks, and we drove around and saw a few different places, and I also read a lot of literature and looked at a lot of photographs. I think that I was really influenced by pictorial representations of this area. So the text is very image heavy for that reason. And just a lot of conversations from people who are on lots of different sides of this story. It's a fictional story, but it's based on, you know, things that we heard from people when we talked to, you know, a flower shop owner and, you know, medical professional, several medical professionals, scientists, just residents, a drug addict, just trying to kind of distill all these stories and make it into something that's very much possible, but also is fictional.
Where have you all performed it at this point?
We've performed in Huntington, West Virginia, Fayetteville, Lewisburg, and those are the places we've performed in West Virginia. We did a performance in Louisville, Kentucky, and then in Pittsburgh and in my hometown, State College, Pennsylvania. And this Mother's Day, we performed at the in New York City at the Greenwich Music School.
Oh, that's great. And what has the reaction been?
It's been interesting seeing the reaction in different places, mm-hmm. based on kind of the level of familiarity the audiences have with the topics that are explored through the piece. I think the most rewarding performances have been in communities in West Virginia and also at the Appalachian Studies Conference, where there was a large amount of knowledge both at Appalachian Studies, because there were a number of authorities through their expertise on the topic, and then in some of the places we've performed in West Virginia, authorities through personal experience. So that's been a really rewarding aspect of the performances.
I was wondering, because the music is an operatic style, and that's not something that we hear much in the region. I think in the older days in the coal camps, there were people that came from Italy and different places in Europe where, you know, this style of music was probably fairly common and popular, the popular music at the time, but not so much anymore. So I wonder if people react to the music just in on its own. And in the performance, Nate plays the piano beautifully, and then you sing bass.
Mm-hmm.
And it's quite different from what we're used to.
That's one of the things I'm really interested in, actually, is the world of what we call classical music has become very much divorced from popular culture. And like you said, you know, that there might have been operas sung in the coal camps, but these days that kind of day-to-day interaction with this type of music just doesn't happen. And I think that's because people have seen it as something either outdated or emotionally detached. You know, like contemporary classical music, people see as just very highly intellectual and not really appealing to their feelings. And so I've been really interested in how we can make the world of contemporary classical music and the world of people who just live in these communities or are maybe interested in the stories, make those worlds kind of collide and overlap and rub up against each other. And I've been really pleased that people's reactions, they don't seem to be turned off by the music. They even, you know, people, most of our audience has not been people who are accustomed to hearing new music. That's a term that we use in the classical community for contemporary, you know, classical music.
Uh-huh.
There's not really any good term for it, because new music is kind of a pompous way of applying a label to a very small subcategory of new music. But so most of our audience has been people who maybe haven't been accustomed to these kind of sounds, but they have been able to really, I feel like, connect to the story through the sounds. My favorite reaction is when people say that it just touched them on a very emotional level, and that it reminded them of something in their own lives. And we've had a lot of people who have cried when they've seen it. And that, to me, you know, not to be sadistic, but it makes, I feel like I've done my job if people are crying in the course of the performance, because it's a very intense subject, and it's not meant to be entertainment. It's meant to really do it. You know, I'm trying to do what art does best, which is transcend the conditions of reality and allow people to experience things on a very deep level.
We hear on the show a recording that you've done. Tell us a little bit about that process.
It was actually that was the second time we recorded the full thing, because we tried it once and we were only able to record in the middle of the night, three nights in a row. And so we found that our musicianship at 2 a.m. On like six cups of coffee, you know, trying to run through this music, which is really, it's quite difficult. I mean, Andrew certainly makes it look easy, but it's difficult music for both of us. And so those sessions ended up not really yielding the result that we wanted. After we recorded it and mixed it and mastered it and everything, we just listened to it and decided that we could do better. So we recorded it again, this time at WVU. They were generous enough to let us use their space for free. And I did all the recording, the engineering, and we borrowed some microphones from their student radio station. And we recorded it. it's definitely not straight through. There's a lot of editing. So, like, I think the last track has like 13 edits in it or something. We just tried to find the best version of every take and just stitch it all together so that it sounds like a seamless version that's actually better than we could perform it.
Oh, well. And then you plan to release this, a limited edition release that will be available to the public, I understand.
Right, yeah. It's on Bandcamp. If you just search for Dust in the Bottom Land on the website bandcamp.com, that's BANDCAMP. And, yeah, you can download it there, or you can order a physical edition, or you can also get a copy of our zine that we made, which contains the libretto and some essays that we wrote and some photographs. It's available for the public, and we love if people would check it out.
Now, both of you are have been studying music for a long time, and Andrew, I understand you're getting ready to continue your studies. And what's that all about? And, you know, to sing bass, to sing this style, what kind of studying and learning and practice does that involve?
Well, all kinds of things. So for a young bass like myself, I studied in undergrad at University of Michigan with a few teachers. But for low bass voices, it takes just a while for the voice to mature into its physical prime. I'm still a good decade before that prime. I'm 27. now is a time for me to both do a lot of physical work, almost like any athlete or person who uses their body to do a very specific sport or set of motions. So a lot of singing comes down to kind of cut and dry muscle memory in a way. but then there's also this whole other aspect of, for a lot of the opera and classical repertoire, learning languages and how to accurately sing in Italian, French, and German. And so I've had instruction in that, and I will have more instruction in that. Also just performance craft. So learning how to it's funny, in a way you have to learn how to be normal while you're on stage. in that sense, it's a little bit of a process of self-discovery that's different for every person. I've chosen to re-pursue it because I'm interested in both in a lot of the traditional classical music that one would think of when they think of opera and classical music. But I'm also really interested in it as a tool for exploring contemporary ideas, life, social issues. I think, like Nate's done with composing Dust in the Bottom Land. And I think one thing that Nate said earlier, I think, and I'm not sure exactly what it was, but in a definition of art as something that's kind of transcending the way we normally experience our lives, that for me personally, when I'm singing in performance especially, that can happen for me. So in a way, that's also something that I love about it, and that is not something I can get in any other way. And if I can get that, and hopefully the people that I'm performing for get some piece of that too, then I'll consider myself very fortunate.
Well, I thought you did an excellent job of being the character and singing and bringing all of it to us. It was really excellent. You know, we're the region that in Kentucky and West Virginia, parts of Virginia, we're really undergoing a change, and as coal mining is reduced and people are kind of struggling with what to do next, and we have this addiction problem as well. Do you see this piece, you know, both of you, do you see this playing a role in the region as we try to kind of grapple with what our future is?
That's certainly a goal for me, that it would pl- play a role. Now, the role that that would play would certainly vary from person to person. And I was pretty explicit all the way through that that this is not a piece that has a particular takeaway message, as in you should go out and do this or you should go out and stop doing that. It's a piece about about stories, which I think are more powerful messages than impositions. So if it does play a role, then it, you know, on one level the role might be raising awareness about some of these issues, but that's not my, you know, my main goal. My main goal is to tell the stories in a way that connects people with the sort of collective consciousness that's going through all of this together, and that's connected in a pretty primal way. So it's everyone's going to have a different reaction to it, and I honor all of those reactions, even if they're, you know, anger or disgust or I would love it if it's not, you know, apathy, but that's, you know, legitimate too, I suppose.
No, that's great. Yeah, I think often works of art like this, art, music, can really help to bring people together and to bring different points of view to a place where people can actually have some conversation and dialogue about it. It's really important to do something like this, and you all have done a wonderful job, I think, it's just an amazing presentation of heart and soul and the way lots of things that are happening in the area.
I think we both intend to come back to this project, or at least I'll speak to myself. I hope, Nate, I hope we come back to this project.
Yeah.
And bring more of the training that we're getting to bear on it, and give it ongoing life. For those of you that are listening to it today, you can. We have a Facebook page, Dust in the Bottomland, on Facebook, and if you want to comment on there on what your reactions are, you can live comment on our Facebook page, and we'll be really interested to see it.
So we thank everyone for listening in tonight, and you've enjoyed the performance, I'm sure. And you can get it on, go to Dust in the Bottomland on Facebook and get all the directions for getting the recording and more, and we'll put that on our WMMT website as well. Thank you, Andrew and Nate, very much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
And for this wonderful creation.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having us.